You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06. It is nice to have you here on this Tuesday morning, July 15th, 2025. Parker Olson produces this fine show, and he is standing by in Madison Studio A2. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot will be along in just a sec, followed by State Senator Jamie Wall from the Green Bay area. We talked to State Representative Ahmad Rivera-Wagner yesterday from the Green Bay area, and we talked about the state budget. It was, of course, a very bipartisan affair with Republicans and Democrats voting yes and no for various reasons. Representative Rivera-Wagner was a no and explained why. Senator Wall was a yes and tells us about the positive things that were in the budget. That's coming up in just a bit. But first, let's check in with meteorologist Brittany Merlot for what appears to be one very hot, sticky day. This is like a Nashville chicken hot honey kind of day. It's that much heat and stickiness bringing to the day, right?
Yeah. I like the way you put it. It adds a little glaze to the situation.
Yeah, everybody's going to have a little glaze when they come in from outdoors.
Tasty.
Hopefully without the pickles. I'm not a pickle guy. I don't order the Nashville stuff because they throw pickles on it. So give me the hot honey chicken. I don't need the pickles. But
the pickles do throw it off just a little bit, in my opinion, as well. I agree.
And frankly, if there were pickles in the weather, that would be another thing too. But instead,
that would be terrifying.
It would be terrifying. Instead,
it's raining pickles.
Raining pickles. Hallelujah. No, it's not like that at all. It's just going to be steamy and sticky, Brittany.
It sure is. Yes, a very, very hot one. We're looking at temperatures pretty much near 90 across the state, mid-80s. Absolutely, that's what you're hitting today. Plus the humidity on top of that, the heat index is really going to be feeling more like those mid-90s for a lot of us, low 90s for some of us. I mean, this morning it's already 75 degrees in Siren. And then, of course, you go by Lake Superior, it's about 63 degrees. So we're already starting off with a mild morning. We've got a ton of sunshine out there. There's only a few clouds far, far northwest up towards Lake Superior area. Those are going to start to build and spread a little bit more in towards the state, but staying into the northwestern parts of the corner because we've got a front that is just lining up there and stalling there tonight. But then by tomorrow, this low pressure system starts to push down south and it kind of swings some storms and some heavy rainfall as we go into our Wednesday for the rest of the state. So we've got a wet section of the week ahead, but today is definitely going to be a hot and dry one.
Or as Rob puts it from Tigerton, Louisiana swamp weather in Wisconsin today.
Sounds about right. Mosquitoes everywhere.
Yep. Good morning from Tigerton, Rob says. It's sunny, hazy, 68. Yesterday, I mowed 4 yards in the Wittenberg area. Took an hour lunch at Brianna's in Wittenberg to enjoy the air conditioning. Yeah. Today, I've got a mow in Tigerton. I had to stock up on lots of Gatorade just to stay hydrated. It's like Rob knows exactly what Brittany's going to say. And if Greg Bach would burst through that wall like the Kool-Aid man right now, if he could. Tell Rob to stay hydrated. And Rob goes on to say, I really appreciate the people that work in the field to teach people with developmental disabilities because I was on the receiving end of their services and appreciated their help on this Developmentally Disabled Professionals Appreciation Day. So again, thanks to all those folks for all that you do.
Absolutely.
Not as smoky, thankfully, from the Canadian wildfires. The discomfort is just all ours. It's just the natural discomfort that we feel
instead. Let's go from one to the other, though.
But it's yesterday it was, hot, and a lot of folks were on the lake. Either they were vacationing or just, some of the local kids on summer vacation. But there were a lot of people that said, let's just get on the jet ski or any boat and anything that gets the water churning and puts a little moisture up there. Not the kind that you sweat in, but the kind that makes you feel better,
The refreshing kind, yes.
The refreshing kind, yes. So
a sprinkler.
I expect it's going to be another noisy one on the lake today. Thank you, Brittany. We'll check back with you in an hour.
Sounds good.
As always, a reminder that you can sign up for our daily newsletters at Up North News, a separate entity from Civic Media, but so happy to have this morning partnership every weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. You can sign up for our newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. Again, upnorthnewswi. Don't forget the wi.com, and we'd love to have you as a subscriber. Among the things that we also have are a Sunday newsletter that I put together, Sunday Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, all about Wisconsin politics. And I have to say that our question of the week has really tapped into something lately. And it isn't all about Zoran Mamdani, the Democratic nominee who is the next mayor apparent in New York City, but AOC from New York City, Bernie Sanders, certainly other folks, there are people in our legislature now who describe themselves as Democratic socialists. And for some people, that is really off-putting, feeling like they are going to turn off all the moderates and it's going to cost Democrats elections. And there are plenty of others who go, no, 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 this is what we needed. This is a breath of fresh air. No squeamish Democrats. These are folks that are saying, look, these are our values. This is what we absolutely want to do. And then there are those in the middle that say, hey, there's room for both. There's room for centrists. There's room for people who describe themselves as Democratic socialists or far left, whatever you want to call it. And so we asked, what's your opinion on this? Now, I haven't tallied up the results fully yet, but I bring this up because it really did bring in a lot of responses right away all over the place. I mean, if you just go by the A, B, C, or D, and I'll tell you the D answer in a minute here. They are all over the place. There is here's Don here, who votes for the big tent. There's room for all, where he says we need to have room for an open discussion of issues. Let's see. There's one here that also says big tent, but Liz says Dems must have a coherent, simple, values-based message, not just anti-Trump. After all, Mamdani won on the topic of affordable housing. And then there's C, who says, nope, option C is, nope, don't go too far to the left. Dawn says, let us not forget past losses due to far-left idealism, a.k.a. Bernie Sanders. And so on it goes. So we'd love to know your opinion. You can be a subscriber to our Sunday newsletter simply by heading to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe in the top banner. Or if you just want to weigh in on this question, send us a note. Radio@upnorthnewswi.com is our email address. Again, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Or, of course, if you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube, just put a little something in the comment section right there. All right, State Senator Jamie Wahl joins us now from the Green Bay area. We'll talk about the state budget and more. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Hey, nice to have you here. Let's just get right into the way that I started off the segment here, saying that for the state budget bill that passed last week, there were both Democratic and Republican votes, both for and against, for various reasons. You came down on the side of voting yes, although you were quick to add in your statement that hardly makes this a perfect document. Tell us why, in the end, you came down on the side of voting for it.
Sure. Well, look, this was not the budget I would have written, but you don't get everything you want in life all the time. And, you know, fundamentally, if you want a budget that's going to reflect the priorities of the Democratic Party, you need to have Democrats in the majority in the legislature, and we don't have that. But we found ourselves, or I found myself as a Democrat in the Senate, with some unexpected leverage, because it turns out that the Republicans in the Senate are internally divided and were not able to come together around a plan of their own. Okay. So that left us with a couple options. We could have thrown up our hands and walked away and said, this is not the budget we would have written, or we could do what we did, which was come to the table and make it better. One thing that really influenced my thinking was that the state would have lost more than $1 billion in federal Medicaid funding if we hadn't been able to beat the Trump budget to the punch. That's why you saw Governor Evers signing the budget in the middle of the night. And I've gotten an education in my brief time in the legislature from people who depend on the Medicaid program. I mean, it's not just folks that don't have a lot of means. It's seniors in nursing homes who've exhausted all their other income. It's kids with disabilities and their parents. I mean, it's rare that I run into a family like that where one of them doesn't pull me aside and say, look, my my kid is in Katie Beckett or some other Medicaid program, and I really would appreciate it if you go to bat for us. And I took that seriously. So in my mind, the alternatives were worse. It was either that we were going to walk away and have no budget at all, which is basically what we have minus the good things that we were able to get in there, or that they were going to, the Republicans were going to get organized and pass some hard right document that catered to the most extreme members. And neither of those were a win. So I took the wins in front of us, and I think that was the right thing to do.
Do you feel like, without getting everything that you wanted, because again, that's part of what politics is, and sure, the governor certainly knows that as well, those things that didn't happen, do they basically just become the platform that you run on and that Democrats run on in 2026, is to say, look, these things weren't in, you vote for us, this is what's going to come next time around? Or do you look at other factors and you don't worry about what didn't make it into the budget?
Well, look, there were a lot of good things in the budget that we were able to improve. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that we saved the state's child care industry from a crisis. Governor Evers had used some federal money to help prop up our daycare centers through the pandemic. Those funds were expiring. We had surveys that told us that maybe a quarter of all the daycare centers in the state were going to go out of business, and think of the impact that has on kids and their families, really in the Wisconsin workforce. This is the best budget for the UW system in a generation. And we were, you know, in the middle of conversations about whether we would need to close four-year colleges, and now we are emphatically not in that territory, and that's a win for the students and, again, the future workforce of our state. The one area in which I wish we could have done more was K-12 education. We actually put record increases in special education funding in the budget, because that's what every school district administrator in the state had told us to do. But $500 million doesn't go as far as you think across the state, and some school boards are going to be facing tough choices as a result of this. So that's at the top of my list for something we need to do better at next time, by our kids and, you know, by our property taxpayers as well, because if districts go to referendum, what they're doing is transferring school funding down into the local property tax levy instead of onto the state tax base, which is bigger and more diverse.
All right. And then finally, now that the budget is passed, what else would you like to get accomplished in upcoming sessions, either this fall or early next year before the next round of elections?
Look, what I heard from my voters last year in the campaign and the last 6 months in office is that they're concerned about the cost of living. So I'm focused myself on a number of bills that are going to help with that. We'll be rolling out one in a couple weeks now that is going to help school districts and their health insurance costs. I've got several others that pertain to different ways to make housing more affordable. My gosh, you know, Green Bay is not Manhattan or even Madison in terms of housing costs, but we were, I think, seventh in the country last year in how much our costs increased here, and people have sure noticed. So there are different levers there with the building code, with zoning, with giving local governments a few more tools that they can use to promote housing development. So that's one area I'm focused on.
It's interesting that Josh Shulman, the Washington County executive candidate for governor, we played back an interview from him last hour, and he too cited affordable the cost of housing. So it's clearly something that everybody's aware of. The solutions are another matter, and I'm sure there'll be differences when we talk about that next time around. State Senator Jamie Wahl from Green Bay, thank you so much for the visit and the update on the budget bill. We appreciate it so much.
Hey, thanks for having me, Pat.
All right, Jamie, thank you again. A local update is next for some of you. Others will join me along with Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, and later, Hans Breitenmoser. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, this is the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Yeah, this was an interesting comment on the Josh Shulman interview from Tony up in the Ashland area, who said that, as I just said before the break, Josh Shulman acknowledged housing costs, but didn't really say what he wanted to do about it. And now we, to be fair, also didn't ask him because, again, it was just a quick interview. But much like he said about wanting to be bipartisan, it's one thing to say these things and say, well, I acknowledge that these are problems, but then what is it that you want to do about it? And I'm sure we'll talk more about that with Dan Schaefer just over 1 hour from now from the recombobulation area. But first, it is time to talk to Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12, WJFW-TV in Rhinelander, fresh off the Hodag Country Music Festival. Mr. Hagen, how are you?
Good morning. I'm still recovering, but life is good. Life is good.
How so? I mean, was it were you late nights, too much dancing, too much ha-ha leads to boo-hoo? What exactly are you recovering from?
I haven't heard that one before. No, it was just a couple nights of debauchery. And it's
debauchery, 30, okay. That's fair enough.
You know, 30,000 people around you is really fun in the moment, but it's, you know, tiring as well. I only had one night of late night drinking, and then the rest I was just downing waters like it was my job. So I thought that was a good balance for me.
That's a good man. And what music acts stuck out for you?
Yeah, so I saw Three Dog Night. So you're probably
what?
You're
Three Dog Night?
They're not country at all, obviously.
No,
but,
no, they're not, and they're still alive, which I know is the same thing I said a week ago when I saw Chicago and Milwaukee. But Three Dog Night.
Yeah, they should be called One Dog Night because they got one of the three founding singers.
Okay.
And he was moving pretty slow. He was moving kind of like Joe Biden was toward the end of his presidency. He was kind of shuffling along. But he could still sing it. And it was funny. We saw one of the lead singers I could just see mouthing towards the end of the show, like, we'll play it, because someone had the nerve to ask, hey, are you going to play Joy to the World? Like, of course they're going to play Joy to the World.
Of course. Like, what else could he do, right?
Yeah, like, and of course they're going to end with it as well. So,
So Danny Hutton is the only original member. He is 82 years old. He's 82 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
How did he not take a nap in the middle of this?
I know. Well, there was a musical interlude where he stepped off stage, so maybe that was it. But he was—he could still sing it, so good for him. Yeah, it wasn't like hard to listen to. Like, I saw Gordon Lightfoot play maybe, a decade and a half ago, and it was hard at points, you know, because he can't quite sing. So
yeah. Well, I noted that I was at Summerfest when Fleetwood Mac was kind of winding down their very first, you know, incarnation, and then they broke up for a while and eventually came back. But at that wind down, again, they didn't sound anything like what we'd been used to hearing, but clearly they picked it up. Other folks, again, if you lose it, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. And so if you can sing, keep singing. If you can play, run. If your knees are still working, keep running. That's all I'm going to say about that. Trust me, you miss your knees once they're gone. But it was a good time for you. You enjoyed everything else about it?
No, it was a great time. A lot of people, I mean, everyone was in a good mood. So it's hard not to be in a good mood as well with that. But a lot of people.
It's definitely a summertime thing. And yet the one story I wanted to ask you about that you're covering up there at Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander deals with ice damage.
Yeah.
And obviously there's the damage, there's the cleanup, and then there's paying for the cleanup and getting help where you can. And that's something that city leaders have been working on recently.
Yeah, that's right. So in March, you may remember in northern Wisconsin had a really bad ice storm. And it was, you know, pretty much once in a generation. People that I talked to said they've never experienced anything like it before. So Rhinelander had a big brunt of that. You can remember the Hodag Dome was punctured during that storm, but a lot of trees were lost. So we just got a $44,000 grant from the DNR to replant a lot of trees, as well as compensating all the work that went into all of the cleanup. So that's progress for the city.
Yeah, because again, these things can get to be real. Mother Nature can be very expensive sometimes. A very expensive, I was going to say roommate, but she's basically the landlord. You know, we're the ones paying the rent here. What was the story I saw about somebody going especially speedy on their motorcycle.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it must. I wonder how expensive that ticket is, going 121 miles per hour. So he was taking his motorcycle north. This is a 19-year-old from Mozanie, Wisconsin, head north on Highway 51, and he's going in between cars, and they pull him over, and they say, do you know, like, how fast you're going? And he says, you know, my speedometer is broken. Like, well, you're going 121 miles per hour. And he said, well, I thought I was only going 95 miles per hour.
Thought he was only going 95. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, just casually twice the speed limit of 65. So I'm wondering how much he'll be paying for that.
I know this is a little dark, but there's a reason why the Flight for Life helicopter is nicknamed by a lot of people as Flight for Parts. Because they're just going out there and they're scraping people up who make poor decisions, shall we say, and are, you know, then become the organ donors that more responsible people sometimes need. So I hope this is a life lesson. I mean, he only got a ticket. He didn't get a ride, you know, to the medical examiner this time. How about you? Are you a motorcycle rider at all?
Never. I wouldn't touch the thing. too dangerous for me.
You're a wise man.
I like my four walls of my vehicle. My father, he had a motorcycle and he sold it to pay for my mother's engagement ring. Isn't that nice?
Aw, that's romantical. That's
yeah. So cool. Pat, did you ever get on a motorcycle?
Yes, and was involved in a very minor crash. But you know, the bike fell on top of me. I was a passenger, and I was just like, yeah, I don't think I need to do this much anymore. You know, It's a no bueno for some of us. Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12, thank you so much for the visit. As always, have a great day.
Thank you, Pat. Have a good one.
All right. Coming up in less than 30 minutes, Jeff Renicki from the Friends of the Apostle Islands on responses from the new signs the Trump administration is putting up about reporting anti-American history in our national parks. But Hans Breitenmoser is next. You're up north. Is ready to do some road tripping with Matt Nair on Air and the Todd Alba Show. They will be hitting the road starting tomorrow with stops in Oshkosh, Butternut, and Hayward. So join them, join Jane, Todd, Greg, all about sharing stories about what makes Wisconsin great. So catch the special road trip editions of Matt Nair on Air and the Todd Alba Show coming up starting tomorrow across the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up on Todd's show today, he's actually broadcasting from the studios in Racine, and he will have, he'll be talking to, I guess Aaron Zommers will be there as well, making a special appearance in Racine. You're going to want to gather around, folks. And then on Maggie Dawn, Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, will be a guest co-host. That's coming up at 4 o'clock this afternoon. The latest crop report, or ag report, I guess you could call it, is in from the USDA for Wisconsin. Clearly, there's no drought anywhere. Nobody is reporting that they're very short on topsoil moisture. In fact, 20% report surplus moisture. Corn silking is at 13%. The soybeans are 44% blooming. Oh, but why stats when we can just go right to the source? We can go right to the farm up in Lincoln County. Hans Breitenmoser is standing by. He's got his corn. He's got his oats. He's got his soybeans. And he's got his cows. Hans, good morning. How are they all doing?
And I'm full of anecdotal evidence, so I don't have any actual facts and figures, but I can tell you what's going on up here and on my little farm.
And going well so far?
Yeah, yep. So okay. We're just going to start chopping our new seedings this morning. So in other words, the hay ground that we seeded down this spring with a nurse crop of forage oats mixed with alfalfa, clover, and some grasses that we planted this spring, we are going to take a first cutting of that here today.
So that forage is that, I mean, that's quite the combination there. That sounds like, you know, like the ultimate trail mix if you're a cow. You know?
That is the ultimate trail mix if you're a cow. And if you can get it early enough and so forth, it's very digestible and has lots of protein and should make some milk for us.
You ever mix peas in with your oats?
Yep, years ago we did that. We haven't done that for several years, but yeah, that's a forage crop that guys do, peas and oats. Yep.
The reason I ask is that my wife, Sherry, grew up on a farm, and occasionally there'd be oats and peas, and she'd talk about, you know, being able to go out into the field and get the peas, you know, right there out of the field. And a couple years back now, now again, we're up to four grandkids now, but when we had our two grandsons, she showed them one time how to go out into the field, you know, amongst the oats and the peas and where to get the peas. And I tell you, every summer after that, when they'd go back to her parents' farm in Manitowoc County, they'd be like little piggies out there in the field, could not get enough of the fresh peas that were growing right there on the farm. And again, I mean, these are kids that have never lived on a farm, but when they get there, it is just so fun to watch them go, wow, these peas taste different than what comes in a can. Isn't that great?
Yeah, well, they are a little different, but the cows tend to like them as well. So.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, whenever the rare times that the field across the street here has some peas and oats, you might see Sherry sneaking over just to grab a little something here. Let's talk about the state budget again for a second, because, and again, the real theme here is that there's something for everybody to like and something that anybody can not like. And there is an article in the Wisconsin State Farmer from the, you know, Gannett USA Today network. Colleen Kotke wrote it and talked about the things that were in the state budget that agriculture advocates do like that are in there. Clearly, there are things missing as well. But Hans, as you were looking at that and thinking about what the legislature ended up doing, can we start by pointing to a couple of things that were positive developments in the state budget bill?
Sure. Yeah, I think the $30 million to county conservation staff was a plus. You know, I was on the county board here in Lincoln County for 10 years, and I was on the Land Services Committee, and I know that the you know, that staff does good work. It's important work. It's the kind of work that keeps our surface water and groundwater clean, keeps erosion from happening as much, and so forth. So I think that will be for rural counties, that's going to be a real plus and a welcome addition. I think also the three new staff for DADCAP is a good thing as well, because again, there's, you know, you can have programs, but without staff, how do you implement them, right? So those are, you know, things that I think were really important, and I'm glad they did get done.
So there were things that were in there, but you know, there was a food security grant, there was a CDL driver training grant program, and things like that. But I know Wisconsin Farmers Union also said that there were some missed opportunities, like excluding a Wisconsin local food purchase assistance program from consideration in the budget. Did you see as well things like that really could have, should have been in the budget and didn't make the final cut?
Well, I think LFPA is the thing, right? I mean, that was, you know, that just makes sense. It makes sense on all fronts. It makes sense for, you know, dollars spent for food security for people and money going straight to farmers. So I'm really confused as to why that didn't make it in there, because it did seem to have some bipartisan support. And so that was definitely a disappointment. One thing that I don't know enough about that I probably should is that food security grant and what that's about, because $10 million is not a small amount of money. And so one wonders if that has the potential to make up some of the, you know, some of what we're losing with LFPA. But, you know, it's also unfortunate, too, when you have a program that works and you have staff there, you know, doing it and so forth. To get rid of it and start something different, that's just perplexing to me. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And you know what I would say to that, first I'm going to begin by saying this is speculative on my part, but let's start with childcare. We heard about how Republicans did not want to give Governor Evers a win in terms of childcare. Why? I have no idea. But they created a different way to fund childcare, which again had some funding, but it wasn't the same. And like you said, you have to learn certain things. And I'm seeing a parallel here in the LFPA, the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program, you know, that again is an opportunity to help strengthen local food sourcing. And instead, this food security grant program is $10 million to provide grants to nonprofit food banks in Wisconsin to buy locally grown and processed food for those in need. So, like you said, it may be similar, but the LFPA was a known thing. It was working. And if the only reason they didn't fund it is because Governor Evers wanted it, that would not be a good thing if that's true.
Well, yeah, but that also wouldn't surprise me. I mean, politics pure. But, you know, at the risk of, you know, trotting out cliches, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. This was a thing that was not broke. And so with this new program, I would say the devil's in the details. And it'll be interesting to understand better, you know, like how, where that money's going to go. Because I mean, I feel like LFPA did a good job in getting the dollars directly to farmers and getting the food directly from farmers to people, right? So it was straightforward, it was efficient, and it checked all the boxes. And so I'm cautiously optimistic, and I don't know enough about this food grant security deal to poo-poo it one way or the other. But if it is a situation where a lot of dollars are going to go to some distributor who happens to be located in Wisconsin but is getting food from all over and whatever else, well, then it definitely misses the mark. And we had a system that hit the mark real well. So that's what's a little frustrating for me.
So it certainly makes me want to find out who put that language in, you know, who was behind it, right? What was their motivation? And again, I'm going to try to keep an open mind, but like you said, something was working already.
Yeah. Yep.
There was another story, coincidentally, also done by Colleen Kotke. I want to give her credit for this, which was about the, you know, increasing number of farmers and farm workers who are suing Bayer, the maker of Monsanto, a widely used herbicide. And obviously, there are a lot of cases of cancer and things happening with workers, with farmers. But Bayer, which makes Roundup, now facing more than 180,000 lawsuits around the country, has been pushing legislation at the state level that would shield the company from liability. And they're claiming that it's not, you know, like blanket immunity, that it's just it provides some clarity in what these lawsuits are suing for. It certainly doesn't pass the smell test. In other words, I don't want to smell this because I might get cancer.
Yeah. No, that's dirty pool. I mean, if you're producing a product and there's hazards with it, then you have to be able to step up and defend it. And but to try and, you know, change the rules on how the referee operates so that you don't have to defend it is total BS. And we should be calling BS on that. Roundup has been used for years and years and years. It's used a lot now. I think it's overused in my estimation. It has become this tool that farmers use, and you know, farmers are going to use the tools at their disposal because we're especially corn and beans. They're very thin margin crops and so forth. So you know, it's a herbicide that works, but I do feel like it's totally overused at this point. But beyond that, you know, this issue has, in my estimation, as much to do with, you know, big companies being able to write the rules to keep themselves protected, as it does with the, you know, this particular herbicide.
Yeah. And so right now, according to the article, the label on Roundup does not include warnings about potential cancer-causing effects or requirements to use personal protective equipment beyond regular clothing. And Bayer is saying, well, without this immunity, you know, they may stop producing it and that would impact crops. But the article goes on to say, well, if Bayer stops making Roundup, what'll happen is we'll get this from China instead, where, you know, worker safety is not a thing. And we're basically just transferring, you know, our cancer. We're outsourcing our cancer, essentially, is the way it sounds, when it would just be easier to properly label your stuff.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think there's the truth in labeling is a good thing, regardless if you're talking about, you know, cigarettes or glyphosate or any other product. That to me has less to do with ag and more to do with just living in a free society where you can trust your, trust your government to do the right thing. But I mean, at the risk of going down a rabbit trail, Pat, I think, again, this has to do with how our politics is driven. And as long as it's driven by money, to the extent that it is, then that's when lousy legislation is going to come about, because it's coming from a bad place.
Yeah. again, just again, be serve the people who voted for you, not the people who are giving to you.
Exactly.
I don't know
that's what it goes down to.
How we can make it any easier. And it's difficult to say what we need are more maverick Republicans who will stand up and say we should put these safety labels on, when that shouldn't be maverick behavior. That should be as bipartisan as it gets. And sadly, it is not. Hans Brighton Moser, as always, thank you so much for these stories and for all you do. You got a busy day ahead of you. Thanks so much for starting it with us.
You bet.
Well, I shouldn't say start it with us. You're like 3 hours into your day already, aren't you?
Silly. Yeah, it takes me a really long time to drink that first cup of coffee.
That's it. Yeah. Silly city boy. All right, Hans, thank you very much. A local update is coming up next for some of you. For others, we're going to have our new Way Up North segment Tuesday mornings at 7:50. And folks who are living up along Lake Superior, and we will be visiting with Jeff Renicky, executive director of the Friends of the Apostle Islands, and talk about Donald Trump's executive order attempting to whitewash the history of our national parks. And when we're all back together in our 8 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by Dan Schaefer and by Chad Holmes. Remember, you can follow us at upnorthnewswi.com and, of course, right here mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back at 7:52 to our Way Up North segment that we're doing now Tuesday mornings during this time period, where we visit with some folks north of 29, north of 8, some of them are even north of Highway 2, to tell us up about life up along the Lake Superior shore there in some of the wonderful communities up there. And that would include, of course, the Apostle Islands, and we're going to be talking to Jeff Renicky from Friends of the Apostle Islands in a second. We're going to be talking about an executive order signed by President Donald Trump back in March. Now, this thing is given the ridiculous name, the Restoring Truth and Sanity to American History Act. And it says the reason for the executive order is to revitalize key cultural institutions, meaning bring back Confederate monuments, and reverse the spread of divisive ideology, meaning teaching an accurate and honest view of American history. Well, that all would be fine, but it even got to the point, or has gotten to the point, where the Trump administration has had some signs put up in national parks and other things like the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore that, in so many words, encourage you to snitch on your local park or people who might be teaching a part of history that hasn't been whitewashed enough. And some folks are responding to that, to the National Park Service, and reminding us that there is still truth and sanity, the real kind, with the bulk of the American people. Jeff Renicky joins us now from Friends of the Apostle Islands. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you bet. I think, well, as Tony puts on YouTube, I like it. We should focus more on people who live in and around Lake Superior, the real up north, as there Tony likes to say. So we appreciate that very much. Jeff, before this came up, before there was, you know, everything that the Trump administration is doing, as I make that wide sweeping gesture with my arm here, before all of this, tell me about Friends of the Apostle Islands and the kinds of things the group would be doing in normal times.
Friends of the Apostle Islands is, in essence, a support organization for the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. I like to quote that Beatles song, "We help the park get by and get better with a little help from their friends." So we pick special projects and we raise funds and awareness and volunteers and public support to help the park get better for all of us.
And so you've been doing that for the longest time, ever since it became a national lakeshore. And a lot of that dates way back to a visit from, what, President Kennedy by, was it Gaylord Nelson who brought Jack Kennedy up and helped convince him of turning this into a national lakeshore, which is not the same as a national park. And that's a discussion that we'll have another time. But now with the Trump administration and this executive order that included these little signs, they have been seen up at the Apostle Islands. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is that the sign says or what it's trying to get at?
Well, the sign says specifically three things. One is to let them know if any areas need repair, and that's normal. Any services that need improvement, and that's always good. But the third one is the chilling one. Any signs or other information that are negative about either past or living Americans, or that fail to emphasize the beauty, grandeur, and abundance of landscapes and other features should be reported.
So, you know, let's not say anything bad about those people who, you know, owned enslaved people or who, you know, massacred an entire group of people for their land. Let's just set that aside. It would be enough just to, I don't know, do an eye roll at that. But people have been responding to the National Park Service. What are you getting from some of those responses as far as what you're hearing?
Well, first of all, of course, we would never really know if it weren't for people who were paying close attention. This has not been released by the administration, but it has been leaked by the Coalition for the Protection of American National Parks. And they published a 69-page document which gave all 1,600 responses to that sign through June 30th. And as you might imagine, and as I think the administration didn't expect, the response has been overwhelmingly supportive to the staff of our national parks and the purpose of our parks. Most people are just glowing about the job that parks are doing under very divisive situations. Let me give you quick examples of here in the Apostle Islands. Very well maintained and helpful staff. Little Sand Bay was phenomenal. Staff matched the beautiful scenery. One person was washing the visitor windows. Both were knowledgeable and professional and friendly. The NPS in Apostle Islands needs a larger budget and more staff. And I love this one. Some people are using it to display their sense of humor. He says, "I have seen these islands and they don't resemble the apostles. They don't look like Peter or Paul. They look more like rocks and should be renamed."
I mean, you have to have a little tongue-in-cheek about this because, again, the attempt to whitewash history is what it is. And yet, under things like the National Historic Preservation Act, the people at our national parks and other sites, I mean, they're basically charged with, we want them to teach an honest view of American history, right?
It is. Our national parks have always done a fabulous job at interpreting the importance of human history in our landscapes, in our national parks. And as you mentioned, they are mandated by law to do so, but I also think they see it's important. Parks are more than just postcard scenery. They're the story of America. Wallace Stegner, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author, said that national parks are America's best idea, reflecting us at our best, not our worst. I would take a little different tact, and I would say national parks should reflect us at our most human. And I think our signs in our national parks are attempting to do that.
Without a doubt. And the staff that is doing incredible work to do it in the face of budget cuts and an overall tone from Washington that is not nearly as supportive as it used to be and as it really should be once again. Jeff Reneke from Friends of the Apostle Islands, thank you for giving us a little bit of insight into what people are doing and saying about this. We appreciate it so much, Jeff. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
All right. Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, Chad Holmes, Dan Schaefer, an updated forecast from Brittany Merlot, and more live on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.